Solutions. And before I begin, I would again like to add my congratulations to all the other congratulations to Eric for his fine work and the legacy that he leaves here in Portland. I'm an old person, so I remember 1991 when Eric came. But mostly what I remember is that the difference between where we were in 1991 in terms of shelter and affordable housing and where we are today. And knowing that on any night, especially nights that are cold like now, so many more people are able to be in shelter than ever were at that time. But more importantly, so many more families than single people are able to be in affordable housing and to have wraparound services for their affordable housing because of the projects that Eric has helped sponsor and has helped develop. So let me add my congratulations. Thank you for all that you have done. In terms of this project, this is a schools, families, housing, and community grants program that Human Solutions is undertaking in partnership with the David Douglas School District. The families that we will serve in this project are families from Somalia. The families have come to the United States, have come to East Portland from a war-torn area in Africa, and they have come to us and have begun to become incorporated into the David Douglas school system. But there are some major problems in making that linkage happen. Many of the students in these families came from war-torn areas where they did not go to school at all because there wasn't a school system. Many of them did not know housing at all until they got into the affordable housing projects that we're providing. Lincoln Woods is where many of these families live. It's on 130th between Division and Stark. The families live there. They have affordable housing, but now they're beginning to need to link to the school and to the community. The problem is that for the young children, they are becoming incorporated into the school but need to get into the homework clubs. But more than that, the families of these children do not have English as a first language and have no experience dealing with the school system. And so this project will employ a man from Somalia who will be a link between the Somali community and Human Solutions and the school district to try and ensure that parents can understand what are the notes, what's the information coming back to them from the school district, and more importantly, how parents can get involved in the education of their children. We all know that children are more successful when their parents are involved, but these Somali families are being denied that experience because the parents don't know how to get involved. The third part of this program is that while the young kids, the first and second graders, they come into the program and they learn to read and write in English and they do very well. But the teenagers who come into this program they're high school students and they don't read and write. It's not an ESL problem. It's a problem that they don't read and write. And so here are high school students trying to become incorporated into the high school system and go on to become employed, but they have tremendous barriers because they don't have read and write in any language. So this program will help incorporate those teenagers into the school system and into the workforce system so that they can become productive members of our society. These are Somali families that want to be able to give back to our community, and what this program will do will be a link to the school, but also be a link to the community to let them know how they can give back to the community and how they can get involved. We are very grateful to the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, to Danielle in particular, for allowing us to go forward with this program that will bring services to families that were otherwise cut off altogether. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. This June, just about the time of Rose Festival, there will be the start of 130 new families moving into the Humboldt neighborhood in a place that used to be called Iris Court. And we are just a few paint cans and hammers and nails away from completing what's going to be Humboldt Gardens. With those families come a lot of kids, and what we learned at our first Hope Six project is that when kids show up, you need some really good partners to be there with you. At New Columbia, those partners were Portland Parks and Recreation and Portland Public Schools and the Boys and Girls Club. So as I started to think about the children that would make Humboldt Gardens their home, I thought to myself, who is going to be with us out there? This school's family housing initiative is an awesome approach, and I really appreciate all of your leadership to bring this to us. We have some great people out there just ready to greet these kids as they start unpacking their bags and putting stuff in their rooms. And all of a sudden, it's summer, and none of the kids know each other, and it's a new place for them. We really, at the Housing Authority of Portland, we value housing stability. That's what we do. We build housing. We hope people will come to our housing. And once they're in our housing, we want it to be a good thing. But we know that without stable schools and without a stable family, the housing cannot be stabilized. I really appreciate this work. I hope that you'll come out to Humboldt Gardens. If you're looking for us, we'll be over at the playground at Humboldt School with the Boys and Girls Club and the staff of Humboldt School, and you'll get to meet all the kids, and do come out this summer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. I think that's everybody. I did want to quickly, Mayor, share the other winners. There's four other grants that we're giving out. One to the Community Alliance of Tenants Tenant Family Stability Project. This is a partnership with the county's Touchstone program at 8 high priority schools, and it will support families that live in rental housing and continue CAT's education program through community leadership and targeted fundraising. Our last item was with NEA, and we're also awarding NEA a grant through this project, so we're going to use their capabilities all over the place. And this will be NEA's Family Centers Community and Family Stability Project, which provides culturally specific housing and education services for American Indian, Alaska, and Alaska Native families and students who attend the city's public schools, and will also support the NEA Early College Academy. We've got the third grant is Hacienda's Vamos Enrichment Program. And this one offers culturally specific after-school enrichment, academic support, and parent involvement strategies to Latino and other ethnic minority families in the Cully neighborhood. And the seventh and final is the Oregon Tradeswoman YWA Building Girls Project. It's a five-day summer day camp and after-school program that will focus on introducing the trades to middle school girls this summer. So I think this is going to be a broad and successful group of grants. We want to congratulate all the winners. Great job. Let's see, and we had $850,000that the council allocated for this grant program. These grants are about 425, so about half is still there, and applications for that half will be due on May 15th with a decision in June. So if somebody would like to apply, if you're out there in the audience or in the viewing audience, it's www.thinkschools.org. So I want to thank my colleagues for all their help on this, and I also wanted to just take a second, I don't think he's here today, but to thank Rich Rogers, who has served as the coordinator of this effort since its inception, and he is also leaving the city in 2 days to go into some private business. So I wanted to thank him for his hard work on this. So that's our presentation, Mayor Fine.
Good. Do we have a sign-up sheet?
We did. No one else signed up.
Okay. It's a report. I need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Great work. Thank you. Aye.
Leonard?
This is really outstanding work, something I'm really happy to be involved with. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I do appreciate this work, and I think these initial projects that were chosen to be funding sound like outstanding ones, and particularly their relevance to summer activities. As we all know, it's very important to have activities for youth in the summertime, and this will complement the many other activities, Portland Parks and Recreation, Children's Investment Fund supporting, and we can't do enough in these areas. So good work. Please support it. Aye.
Stan.
Well, I think this is a great idea that's beginning to come together into great reality, and ideas are easy. Putting them together is much more tough. I did also want to note as I'm closing this out that the Planning Bureau is doing two neighborhood action plans under Mayor Potter's leadership that are really designed to really kind of tie these things together. One is in East Portland and the other is in Cully Concordia. And I do think that the East Portland Action Plan, which Commissioner Leonard has graciously stepped in to take my spot on, is another vehicle where we have a real immediate opportunity. And probably the most startling thing to me about the School Family Housing Initiative is when I got a call from a national education magazine saying that it was very unique and unusual. It seems to be obvious that we should be coordinating housing and school strategies and these types of efforts, but we have not been as well as we could. And so I think this bodes very well for the future. And again, I want to thank Mayor Potter for stepping in and taking the leadership on this. Thank you, Mayor Potter. Aye.
Potter.
And Commissioner Stand, another mark in your contributions to our city and to all the community groups. This is such an important thing for our city to really bring our schools and our communities together, but ensuring that there's housing so that we can keep our children and our families here in Portland. And for that, I thank you, Commissioner Sten, and for all the folks who are going to help do that, I vote aye. Move to the regular agenda. Please read item 430.
Extend contract with ABHT Structural Engineers for the Portland Building Third Floor Computer Room Project.
Staff?
Morning, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. My name is Ed Neuvine, Project Manager with the Office of Management and Finance. The ordinance before you is to amend the contract with ABHT Engineers to extend their contract for a period of 1 year. They're currently used in the project, computer room upgrade project for the Portland building. There's probably about a balance of about $4,000 in their current or their original contract, and I'm just going to use that up. We need the extension for 1 year. Questions?
Questions from the commissioners. Was there anyone signed up to provide testimony on this? Please call the vote.
There was a sign-up sheet and no one signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Aye.
Please read item 431.
Authorized contract with McBride Architecture, PC for $167,000 for architectural and engineering services to restore exterior envelope of the Portland building.
Second reading, call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 432.
Adopt sanitary sewer conversion charges through fiscal year 2008-2009.
Mr. Adams?
Yeah, do we have people to testify? Oh, good. I will leave it to Dan and Lana.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Council. I'm Lana Danaher with the Bureau of Environmental Services. If you will recall, I was here in January with a ordinance that authorized Bureau of Environmental Services to establish a new program to respond to a contentious issue in the community with non-conforming, what we call party sewers. And we have been working since then to develop that program. Today, we have an ordinance in front of you that is implementing the first phase of this program and includes a cap on the assessment that property owners will have to pay when they connect to the new public sewer. We believe that this ordinance and this cap will provide the property owners with certainty that they need in order to move forward, enabling houses to be bought and sold without this inhibiting the transaction and slowing down sales. We also believe it will help to facilitate a willingness to convert amiably and neighbors to be able to come to a resolution without what we have seen in the past, some rather unpleasant interactions. Dan, could you go to the two slides? It does have two classes of rates on the cap. One is for simple projects, which will be by far the majority of projects, residential, simple commercial, and is currently will be $1.83 per square foot of property. That rate represents 70% of the actual average cost for similar projects over the last several years. To give some reality to it, typical residence that's on a 5,000 square foot lot with this rate would be subject to a little over $9,000 of charges. This is a lower amount than the actual cost, which would be closer to $13,000 or a little bit over. We think that by having a period of time over the next few years of subsidizing it and gradually going to the actual cost, that we can incent people to sign up and lock in the rate early, and we can get a handle on getting this done quickly. We have gone to PERB and have talked about this among people who are affected by it as well, and we have had pretty much unanimous support for it. There is also another class, which is the complex class. This would be if the party, as you may know, there are several party sewers and private sewers in the right-of-way in the downtown area and in other areas like that where you have very difficult and expensive extensions of the sewer that would be necessary. We did not think that they should have to pay, that they should be able to pay the same rate as the residents, nor did we want the residents' rates to be artificially high, including those. So we do have a two-tier. That one is currently, at this cap, would be at $4.08 a square foot. And the one for complex shows you what the average cost for a typical downtown lot would be at the discounted rate, which I don't have in front of me and can't remember what the exact amount is. But are there any questions?
Questions to the commissioners. Is there a testimony sign-up sheet?
One was set out and no one signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, Lana and Dan, I want to thank you. I also want to thank Lisa Libby in my office and Shoshana Oppenheim and the entire BS team for getting on top of a, 85-year-old problem?
At least.
At least an 85-year-old problem in the city. A reminder to Portlanders that you need to check before you buy a house whether or not the sewer that goes under the city street is indeed the city sewer. This is going to provide people the certainty and the transferability that folks were looking for. And I really want to thank you for your innovation and helping to work something out that provides those and at the same time protects sewer ratepayers. So thank you very much. Aye.
Saltzman?
Good work tackling a long-standing problem. Aye.
Sten?
I agree. Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
And Leonard votes aye.
Please read item 433.
Authorize the Portland Office of Transportation to enter into a contract with Max J. Cooney Construction, owner of the old Sovie Island Bridge, to acquire and relocate the Sovie Island Bridge center span to Northwest Flanders Street over I-405.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mayor. If Bill and David would come up, I'll make a few opening remarks. So, first, why this project? The Portland Office of Transportation does not have enough resources to manage the transportation system in a cost-effective and in a safe manner. So we have to prioritize what projects we do, what projects we don't do. As the city's transportation commissioner over these past 3 years, I prioritized safety projects, projects that will save lives and reduce injuries. We've held two transportation safety summits, the first transportation safety summits in the history of the city. And through that, we have worked hard to identify specific improvements, engineered improvements, that would go in at specific places within the city that we know will have a positive impact on safety. This project is in keeping with those priorities. It is also very similar to my efforts and the council's approval of $11 million over the past 2 years that went to transportation safety projects the bulk of that $11 million being spent in East Portland. The most dangerous streets in the city are in East Portland and West Burnside. So it is appropriate that we focus on these two areas of the city. This removes is also responsive to public opinion research that we've done recently, where Portlanders, whether they ride a bike or not, said, and bikers, whether they go out in busy streets or not, said that we need to remove the conflict, but more of the conflict between bikes and cars. And that's how we came up with our proposal to build 110 miles of bike boulevards that would expand upon the 20 miles of bike boulevards we already have. Why this project as well is Americans are spending more every month right now on transportation costs than they're spending on food. A bike trip, a pedestrian trip, might not work for all families for all trips, but the more of those trips that we can get on bikes and pedestrians, the better we will all be, both in terms of congestion, in terms of our own health, and in terms of balancing household budgets. The project before you is one of the most sustainable transportation proposals in the history of Portland, seeking to reuse a piece of you'll hear in greater detail, a piece of local history. There was a time when reuse, just in our own sort of daily lives, seemed very foreign. And there were folks when we worked hard about 20 years ago when we first started pushing recycling, where it was perceived as a waste. It'd be so much cheaper to just continue to throw trash away. Why spend the quote-unquote extra money to recycle this stuff? Well, we've learned a lot of lessons since then. We've learned that reuse and recycling, when you look at the total costs, when you look at the total benefits, are well worth the effort. And they're very much in keeping with Portland's values as a community. This project is no different. This project, as you'll hear, it would, again, be the largest reuse recycling project for transportation in our nation, in our city's history. This project is cost effective. The $3.5 million placeholder amount is a guess. It is the lowest confidence estimate, and it is an estimate that you'll hear is a low confidence estimate, not based on preliminary engineering. The 5.5 estimate for moving the bridge, as you'll hear, is based on combination of guaranteed maximum price from the contractor and also high confidence estimates based on engineering done by ODOT and the Portland Office of Transportation. This is also a cost-effective project because instead of an overpass-style concrete structure, we get a 30-foot width span versus a 15-foot width span at the 3.5. The money going to this project cannot be used except for $500,000 of general transportation revenues that would be coming from the Safe, Sound, and Green Street package requests that we've made for this fiscal year, leverages $5 million in other funding. Tax increment funding cannot be used for basic maintenance. I wish it were different, but it's a state law. This is a long overdue project. The Flanders Street Bike Boulevard project, as you've heard, has been on the books for some time. This is a restorative urban design project. It will bridge the divide in a way that people will actually want to use it. If you want to see pedestrian overpasses using the sort of basic brutalist style of a freeway overpass, standard freeway overpass, just spend some time in my neighborhood. You'll see the Failing Street crossing. You'll see the Lombard Street crossing. They're not used. They're not considered safe. They're too narrow. The other benefit of this project is because it is wider than the 12 to 15 foot span, it provides the city of Portland with more emergency preparedness, another way to get across I-405 in the event of an emergency, not just if all the other overpasses collapse, but another way to get vehicles back and forth across I-405 if everything else is plugged up. So I appreciate the opportunity to have council consider this today. We'll have a brief presentation from Bill and David, and then we'll have public testimony. We've got some invited testimony, and then I think some people have signed up as well. Thank you. Bill?
I'm Bill Hoffman from the Office of Transportation, and with me is David Alonghi, also from the Office of Transportation. We have a short PowerPoint presentation that David will take us through, and then we're here to answer whatever questions you may have.
Thank you. The genesis for the Flanders Bike Boulevard really began in 2002 when City Council adopted the Burnside Transportation and Urban Design Plan, commonly known as the Burnside-Cooch Couplet. And it was conceived as a way for getting cyclists and pedestrians from Waterford Park to Washington Park, and then beyond that to Forest Park. It does connect Northwest District to the Pearl District to the Old Town, and then to Riverfront, Waterfront Park. But there's a broader context also, where it's also seen as a vital east-west link, connecting the Springwater Trail and the Esplanade also to Forest Park and Washington Park. The existing Savi Island Bridge was built in 1950. It's become obsolete for modern freight. The residents of the island have been campaigning for many years to have the bridge replaced. And here you can see a photograph showing the replacement bridge under construction. It's the one that's larger and rusting. It's a type of steel that rusts, weathered steel. And in the foreground, you see the older bridge in green. The new project began 2 years ago. It will be finished this year. And they're due to start demolishing the old bridge in June. The old bridge is eligible to be on the National Register of Historic Places. It is quite charming, although it's not a work of art. But it is unique. The Center True Truss is a Parker-style truss, which is unique in engineering. They're actually disappearing because of becoming obsolete for modern freight. When you look at the whole bridge in itself, there's really three components. There's the center archway at the center, through truss, because you drive through it. Each side of that, there's a deck truss that you drive over, and they're both made of steel. But then each side of that, again, you have the concrete approaches. And the concrete approaches, similar to the Selwood Bridge, have been deteriorating over the years and are cracked. The steel components, the center steel truss and the companion steel side trusses, are in fabulous shape. They were last inspected in August 07, and in fact, I have the inspection report right here. The flaws noted in the were rust and peeling paint, both of which this project would fix. There were no cracks noted in the steelwork whatsoever. And in fact, we've also discussed the condition of the bridge with the county and with ODOT, and they have confirmed that too, as well as our own site inspection. And this is where the bridge would fit in the east to west Flanders Bike Boulevard connection, shown here in orange, with the gap being, of course, 405. The bridge to bridge the gap, located between Ebert Street and Gleason. It's located between 15th and 16th. On 15th Avenue, you have the historic Meyer & Frank warehouse, soon to be renovated. Again, another pedestrian-friendly view showing the bridge in location, looking towards the Pearl District. We do envisage putting a pedestrian signal at this location to get bikes and pets safely across 16th Avenue. And we've talked to ODOT about that, and they're happy to accommodate us. But the bridge does fit. We have done due diligence. We've surveyed the site. We've surveyed 405. We've mapped where the constraints are. And oddly enough, almost like a glass slipper, the bridge fits perfectly between the curbs and outside of the retaining walls of the freeway. In fact, it will be the only bridge that meets the vertical clearance that the feds now require on the freeway, which is ironic. But there is an opportunity, and timing is critical, to reuse the existing bridge for this location. The old bridge is declared obsolete by the county. They have no future plans for the old bridge. In fact, Cooney Construction, who are building the new bridge, and now actually, by terms of the contract, owners of the old bridge. We did carry out a feasibility study, and we did determine that it is feasible to move the bridge to 405. We've overcome all the obstacles. We found the route to take you there. but the bridge is scheduled for demolition in June of 08. That's critical because when you get a permit to do work in the water, the Corps of Engineers give you between June and September to carry out that work. If you miss that window, the in-water work window, well, there's no exceptions. You just can't miss that window. And the contractor has to meet that deadline. He has to demolish this bridge this summer, or he will suffer substantial delays and penalties. We are proposing to break the construction of this project into two phases, which is quite logical. Phase one would be moving the bridge from Savi Island to Terminal 2. We've met with the port and discussed using Terminal 2, and they're quite happy to do that. In fact, they built the new bridge at Terminal 2 and floated it upriver. While at Terminal 2, we will remove all the lead paint that's on the bridge and repaint the bridge. Second phase, and there may be some overlap here, is that while that work is going on at Terminal 2, design work will be underway to design the foundations and then build the new foundations at 405. We'll then do some site prep work and install the pedestrian signal, and finally move the bridge into place. Funding sources. We have a variety of funding sources to complete the package. Transportation system development charges of $2 million. PDC tax increment funding for the River District, another $2 million. Federal money, transportation enhancement funds administered by ODOT, $1 million. And then Safe Sound and Green Streets program, $0.5 million. But the neighborhood have also been working hard to start working on private fundraising. And in fact, I think they've had some success so far. Schedule. June, July is when the contractor is scheduled to demolish the bridge and resalvage, if we decide to do so, the center span and move it to Terminal 2. July and September, they'll be working on the lead paint removal and abatement and repainting the bridge. Concurrently, we'll be designing the foundations for the new location and undergoing permitting with ODOT. And then September and October, we will build the foundations and do some site prep work. And finally, towards the end of the year, move the bridge into place. And that completes the presentation. Thank you.
Roger, could you come up? And I forgot to have you come up and talk about the safety issues in the corridor, the reason why this should be considered a priority.
Sure. My name is Roger Geller. I also work in the Office of Transportation. And we do a lot of bike counts around the city, and we see that the counts in Northwest Portland are surprisingly low. And we wonder about that because Northwest has the density, it has the proximity to the central city. You look at cities around the world that pride themselves and create conditions for bike friendliness, and you'd expect to see very high numbers. And I think the problem that we have in Northwest is that we have very poor access between Northwest and the central city right now. The routes for cyclists are typically on busier streets. They're somewhat disconnected. We have bike lanes that drop. We do have the freeways a significant barrier. We do have crossings of the freeway, of course, but those crossings are really appropriate only for the most, I guess, fit, the strongest, and the most fearless of cyclists. Burnside, Everett, and Gleason. Everett and Gleason have bike lanes on them that drop once you get past the crossings, and then the conditions are not at all suitable for the type of cyclists that we want to encourage. We want to make our streets safe for just the average citizen, not somebody who necessarily self-identifies as a cyclist. So Flanders Street has been on our map for a long time. We did a project in Northwest Portland working with the streetscape that we had, and we're able to create some bike boulevards up there. And Flanders was one of those, and of course it ended at the freeway. And we think that Flanders Street is going to be a primary conduit between the neighborhoods in Northwest Portland and the River District and the rest of the central city. And as David mentioned, the connections to really the fabulous pathway system that we have along the river. And so this, because of this connection across the freeway, because it's going to keep traffic volumes on Flanders Street low, it's not going to encourage increased auto traffic, Because it's going to be a nice family-friendly route and because it's going to connect to other parts of this 110-mile network that Commissioner Adams mentioned, we see this route as being very popular, very well used. And we have a lot of 15-foot wide paths in the city currently. We have the Springwater on the Willamette. We have portions of the Esplanade that are 15 feet. And they've almost been undersized from the day they opened. Among the most common complaints that I get in my office from pedestrians are about conflicts with cyclists on our pathways. They're just too small. And for that reason, with the South Waterfront, when we build the final pathway there, we're taking our lessons from Vancouver, British Columbia, which has for years has been widening and widening and widening their pathways. And in that area, we're going finally with a 30-foot wide pathway corridor that will have 10 feet for pedestrians, 12 feet for cyclists, and then a median in between to keep them separated. And in my observations of what we've built around the city, we can't build big enough to accommodate the future demand for bikes. So that's what we've seen.
What is the cost to build the 15-foot pedestrian bridge, pedestrian bicycle bridge?
I did carry a low confidence estimate on that, and was based on another low confidence estimate carried out by a consultant on a different bridge project, which was, in fact, the Gibbs Street Bridge under the tram. We thought using scale as a model, $3.6 million. But that was a low confidence estimate. The $5.5 million is a high confidence negotiated cost.
So roughly a $2 million difference.
Yes.
And is the Gibbs Street Bridge, how wide will that be?
15 feet.
Gibbs Street Pedestrian Bridge?
Yes.
15 feet?
Yes.
Are bicycles allowed on that bridge?
Yes.
Part of the reason for that is we got $11 million from the federal government, thanks to Congresswoman Darlene Hooley. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be really blunt, we're struggling to find a bridge form
that works,
that will come in on budget, even at 15 feet, for the $11 million that we have for the project. Thank you. If we could have Mayor Bud Clark, Kathleen Charlow, and Patricia Gardner come forward.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to see you, Mayor, again. And we just had dinner the other night. and good to be here for all the commissioners. We didn't expect to be first, because we have all these experts that know the history and everything like that, and it's great. But one of the great things about this is it's the passion of the neighborhoods that's brought the people on both sides of I-405 together. And we've come together because of the common interest of both safety and the economic viability that this bridge would add. Eric Trommeld is on the Northwest District Association Board, and he wanted to be here but couldn't be here, but I took his words and that we were on an email, but she said he couldn't be here, and so I'd like to read those. From Eric Trommeld, who is a neighborhood, he lives on 20th and Irving, says, "The bridge idea has excited me ever since it was suggested. I use Flanders Street as the best biker-friendly route to the waterfront, but of course have to negotiate Gleason and Everett. Everett and Gleason are no problem for an experienced biker, but the joy of possibly having a Flanders byway excites. I always use Flanders Street when I have my grandchildren in tow, and less experienced bikers always prefer it." I think that's the biggest sales point is the bikers need to be separated from the traffic. And I do use the Failing Street Bridge to go to Kaiser. I go out Mississippi and then across the Failing Street, but it is narrow and you just want to get off of it. And you get a lot of noise on that bridge. When you have a wider bridge, I'm just sitting on the bridge coming here from my house today, and with certain barriers, you could cut out almost all that noise from the freeway, the I-405 freeway. This is not the first time a bridge has been moved. As you all probably know, at the turn of the century, the Ford Bridge was constructed across where the Vista Bridge is now, and then when the Vista Bridge was built in 1926, They used that as a scaffolding to build the Vista Bridge over Vista, and then they took the old Ford Bridge, the steel bridge, and put it across, it took it to Burlingame and put it across the, what is I-5 there now. And it lasted for over 90 years until they just replaced it here, what, about 10 years ago, I think. So that's all I have to say. It has my vote, and I hope you help us bikers get across the river or get across the freeway.
Thanks, Mayor.
Yeah.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. I'm Catherine Ciarlo. I live at 1804 Southeast 34th in Portland. I am a member of the Portland Planning Commission. However, today I am representing myself. I first became involved with this project over 6 years ago when then-Mayor Katz appointed me to be on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee that was looking at ways to humanize Burnside. And we came up with some ways that you all have discussed many times in the couplet concept and will no doubt discuss further. But one of the things that became clear as we looked carefully at that couplet concept is that the bicycle access through that corridor, which we've heard is already not good, and were the couplet to be implemented, it would essentially eliminate bicycle access for anyone who isn't an extremely competent in-traffic rider. So as the bicycle representative on that committee, it was my job to really try to ensure that we figured out a way to get bikes through the corridor. And Cooch was the obvious answer. However, if we add a lot of vehicles to Cooch, that doesn't work. You move them over to Davis, that's fine, except you get to 405 and then you drop into the freeway canyon. So we talked for a long time about a bridge at Davis. It was a much longer, wider, more expensive bridge because of all the weaving on-ramps, off-ramps, and eventually the Flanders concept surfaced. And it was one of those moments in the Stakeholder Advisory Committee which made it one of my favorite and most unique processes that I've participated in, where something that was good for bikes was something that the whole committee really coalesced around. You know, the business owners on Burnside felt excited about it. The neighborhoods felt excited about it. The Pearl District liked it. Northwest liked it. This whole concept of really trying to connect the Northwest neighborhood to the Pearl, to Old Town, to downtown, and then ultimately, hopefully, to the water. It was just one of those ideas that took hold. And so in the intervening years, you know, I periodically have called up the city transportation department and like, okay, what about that bridge? You know, if we're going to do anything with this couplet, we got to have the bridge. But I think what we're really seeing now is that the bridge is an idea that stands on its own. And it's the kind of idea that has continued to surface. It's continued to hold a lot of weight and excitement. And frankly, I went to look at that crossing, that bike crossing at Cooch on my way to work this morning, and I remembered why it's so terrible, which is you can't get through on the north. You have to cross on-ramps and off-ramps. The signal is crazy. It doesn't really allow for bicycles. It's scary, and it's just not accommodating. So in addition to what we heard about Everett and Gleason, there's no good way to get through there now. And so, you know, I think that most of us agree there should be a crossing. And now the question is, what kind of a crossing? And what excites me and the reason I wanted to come today is the opportunity that we have to both satisfy a bike and pedestrian need and really create a place in Portland and link up some of the investments we've made and capitalize on our identity as a city that has really developed a network of trails as part of the fabric of our city. They're not just outside of the city, but they're in the city. The Esplanade has really done that. This would be a way to kind of continue that. And to do it in a way that is cost-effective. There's no other bridge like this that we could build for $5 million, if in fact that is the price tag. If we end up spending $1 million more than it would cost us to create a concrete slab bridge, in my opinion, it's $1 million extremely well spent, not just for transportation, but for the identity of the city. And, you know, when you think about that Sovy Island Bridge, you see something that is industrial yet gracious. And that's such a good way to sort of echo Portland's history as we do this forward-looking thing of connecting the neighborhoods. So I'm here to urge you to do that. I hope that we have your support, and thank you for listening.
Patricia Gardner, live at 1116 Northwest Johnson Street, and I'm planning chair for the Pearl District Neighborhood Association, and I have a terrible story to tell you. And it was a formative moment that happened to me when I first moved to Portland. I moved here in 93, and a friend of mine in 94 was crossing at Everett on the 6-foot-wide sidewalk, which is what you have there, and was actually struck by a car. And she went over the side and actually went down to I-405 and was hit by a car. And from that moment, from that very moment, I have been driven to make that a better place. I mean, it absolutely formative. Those crossings at Everett and Gleason do not work. I have, they do not work. They do not work as a pedestrian. They do not work as a bicyclist. They don't. They're incredibly dangerous. I have letters from families to give you. The Portland Central families have written many letters about this, about how they don't feel safe about crossing there. And in my experience, I can tell you, they are not safe. It is not a safe place. And we need to do something about it. We've needed to do something about it for over a decade. And we've looked at many, many different plans. And 5 or 6 years ago, we came up with a grand one during the Burnside-Cooch process. And I guess the word is kismet or fate. When the Sobey Island Bridge became available for a dollar, which we're all very sad we didn't buy it for a dollar, and it fit exactly over that freeway. What a moment. It just galvanized everyone's imagination of a better place and a way to really create that connection. We've been advocating, our committee has been advocating for this with PDC for over 5 years, and actually with whoever was transportation chair at the time. I mean, we've been trying to get this for years and years. It first appeared as a line item in PDC's budget 2 years ago, and we've been working both with the PDC commission and the Joint Budget Committee to keep it in the budget. I mean, advocating vigorously, I think, is the word I would use. I do want to say we didn't talk about it with the URAG because that was about boundaries, but we were absolutely talking about it with the budget folks. The vision of the bridge means so much to us, not just to the neighborhood, but to our businesses and to our neighbors in Northwest. This is about connection. There's not great safe connections until you get to Johnson. I mean, from if you think about it from this way, from Gleason all the way over to the very south end of the city, there's not a safe connection across that freeway. To have finally a safe connection across that means, so much to our community and to our city. One of the things that has captured everyone's imagination is the symbolism of the bridge. It's not just any bridge. I can't name. I'm glad you guys know where the 15-foot wide bridges are. I can't name any of them. And it's not because I haven't gone across them as a bicyclist, it's because they don't have a story. This thing comes with a story. It comes with an amazing story, and that excitement of that story has really, really collected so much passion in the neighborhood. And the reason why, it's coming to us whole. We haven't had something like this since they first floated Portlandia down the river. I mean, this bridge is going to come to us whole down the river, and then it's going to come to us whole on a street. And and one of the questions I've been asking people is, what color do you want that bridge? It can be any color. Wow, you should hear people talk about that. I mean, it could be red, and it could be purple. That kind of imagination and that symbol of what it means to say, as a city, pedestrians and bicyclists matter more. We matter more than the automobile. And I don't think we have a flag as good as this bridge. I mean, it's truly a flag to alternative forms of transportation. A 15-foot wide bridge with chain link fence is not going to galvanize people like this bridge is. And so for that alone, we're just immensely excited about it. And have been, I think the word would be passionate. I guess I would just say for all of those reasons, for its green aspects, for the environmental aspects, for what it can mean to us as a city, to how it can connect everybody through a really, something that's never been connected ever since we broke it and when we put that freeway in, I would just really beseech you to to go for it. Go for it. It's worth it. And I think that I can tell you for a fact that we have developers who the only reason they haven't written a check is it needs to be real. I mean, they're lined up, ready to write checks to have this happen because it just has that. I mean, people are always asking me, when? And it's because it is the Sobey Island Bridge. It's not because it's just any bridge. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm going to drop off letters that I was asked to ferry.
So. Kim Carlson, Rule Fish, and Dennis Wild. In that case, Susan Kubota.
Hi, my name is Kim Carlson. I live in Northwest Portland, and I'm the co-chair of the NWDA Transportation Committee, a committee that voted unanimously in support of reusing the Sobey Island Bridge as a pedestrian and bike bridge over I-405. We like the Sobey Island Bridge. It's been our closest connection to family farms and community-supported agriculture. It is over this bridge that countless Portland families have crossed to pick strawberries in summer and pumpkins in fall, and we think this bridge has more years of service to give. First, we do need a pedestrian bike bridge over I-405. I join more fearless neighbors to ride through Northwest Portland on my way to work. I am a reluctant cyclist, but a bike boulevard takes me to Northwest 19th, which becomes a shared bike car lane that I no longer fear. My fellow cyclists on this route turn east on Everett, too fast, too narrow, and for too great a distance for me. I continue across Burnside to Alder, where the shared bike car lane transitions back to a bike lane. The most treacherous part of my bicycle commute is crossing I-405 on Alder on my way to work and on Taylor on my way home, where my bike lane is surrounded by cars on both sides. And those cars are crossing dangerously in front of and behind me. Other more timid cyclists have asked me how I do it. And I know that if not for this most scary part of my bike ride, they would be riding with me. We do need a pedestrian bike bridge over I-405. Second, a Flanders pedestrian bike bridge will be a hard-working commuter bridge. It will provide a much-needed connection between Northwest Portland, the Pearl, Old Town, Downtown, the waterfront, and even the East Side. A 15-foot bridge would simply be inadequate, given the high-density neighborhoods it would span between. There is no precedent in Portland. All other bike-ped bridges are on trails like the Springwater or between less-dense neighborhoods such as the Failing Street Bridge. This bike-ped bridge really needs to carry what will be a growing capacity of commuting and recreational walkers and cyclists, and I believe it needs to be at least 25 feet wide. The Sobey Island Bridge at 30 feet wide is a real bargain. Third, the Sobey Bridge will be safer than a narrower bridge. It can easily accommodate lighting, essential at the Flanders location. Personal safety is an issue on a narrow bridge over a noisy freeway because there is no escape route. A wider bridge provides some level of security due to avoidance or escape options. The Sobey Bridge will be safer. And fourth, since the first Earth Day 38 years ago this month, we have been taught to first reduce, then reuse, and at last resort to recycle. Reusing the perfectly good center span of the historic Sobey Island Bridge uses less resources and less energy than recycling it as scrap. And the entire cost to reuse the perfectly good center span of the Sobey Island Bridge goes directly into our local economy. Reusing the Sobey Bridge is the right environmental thing to do. Finally, my neighborhood has received lip service for years about creating gateways at 23rd and Burnside and at 23rd and Vaughan. And I can't think of a more significant and functional gateway than this historic Sobey Island Bridge over I-405. And I respectfully request that we reuse this bridge. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Rule Fish. I'm here representing the Pearl District Business Association. I'm also a member of the Joint Transportation Committee. That's involves people from both the Pearl District Business Association and the Pearl District Neighborhood Association. And then I'm also here on behalf of a group of citizens that's been meeting since early last fall. I guess we could call ourselves the Northwest Flanders Street Bridge Recycling Committee. And I'm here as the principal owner of Urban Wine Works, which is at the foot of the proposed bridge. So I tend to come at this from a business perspective, and I would suggest to you that, you know, there's been comment about the cost of this project. Well, you always ask the cost to get what? What's your bang for the buck? And I think in this case, over other alternatives, you get something that's going to happen right away. So as a stimulus for economic activity, it's going to happen and have an effect within the year. The second thing is that it will have, I think, a payback for the city in terms of economic activity, and I'll get into more of that a little bit later. But then finally, this group, this adjunct committee that we put together, we have been meeting. We've been talking about the fact that we want this to be a public-private partnership in the sense that we're ready to go out and pound on doors for a variety of reasons that I don't fully understand because I'm not involved in these processes much. I was, you know, ready to go out gathering quarters last fall, but we are now just to the point where we are ready to do that and will do that. A second concern, I think, appropriate concern for business and government is public safety. And I've walked from Urban Wine Works over to the Paragon restaurant for lunch many times. You cannot walk on that 6-foot sidewalk with two people abreast and meet two people coming, and one of the people invariably steps in the street, which is not a good scenario. So it's not safe trying to cross either Everett or Gleason. And then I'd like to also comment sort of on the principles, sort of a, would this be a left brain kind of thing? The city ought to stand for some principles, and businesses ought to stand for some principles. We've talked about reuse. Instead of being a throwaway society or a throwaway community, let's reuse. Reconnect. How about these two very vibrant areas and providing a connection between the two as opposed to the barrier that I-405 now represents? And do it in a way, you know, I've been involved in the redesigning of Northeast Broadway over on the east side, and I always thought it was a big mistake to try to put that bicycle lane on Northeast Broadway. And the reason is because you've got that conflict between the cars and the bicycles. So let's learn from that scenario, which is not a very good one. Let's put the bicycles and the pedestrians on a different thoroughfare, and I think you can relieve congestion on the traffic mode as well. And then I guess finally, reinvention ought to be a principle that we aspire to. Let's think outside the box or the bridge or whatever you want to call it. You know, even the Oregonian brought up the idea of naming rights. This doesn't have to be a lose proposition. You got some money coming back on this project, direct funds. You can lease kiosks on the bridge to vendors, just the same way that I suppose Saturday Market works. It creates a significant event, just floating that thing down the river that's going to bring promotional news coverage to Portland. You've got people over, salespeople over at the Oregon Convention Center that are trying to bring conventions to this city. What a great story they'll have to talk in their sales pitches about another thing, another cool thing that is nowhere else in the other 65 cities that have convention centers in the United States. And then finally, putting our money where our mouth is. Two of the members of this adjunct committee, Fred Chown from Chown Hardware and Jack Joyce from Rogue Brewery, have already pledged up to $15,000 as seed capital to put together the collateral materials that we need to go out and raise money for this bridge. All we need is your vote today. We would appreciate it, and then we'll hit the ground running to raise the money that we need from the private sector. Thank you for your time.
I'm Dr. Susan Kubota, a concerned citizen and a reluctant traffic safety advocate. I wish I could turn back the clock. If I could go back in time to 2006, when this project was first envisioned, My family would have happily given the city the $500,000 to move the bridge. If you could have guaranteed it would have been in place before my niece, Tracy, moved back to Portland to study at PNCA and to work at St. Cupcakes at Northwest 17th in Flanders. If that bridge